Now in Genesis chapter 31, and it's continuing the same story line and narrative that we had in the previous chapter. Right before we enter into chapter 31, the Bible described for us how Jacob had made a deal with Laban about appointing him his wages, and the wages were related to the sheep, and that he was going to basically take his wages from the cattle or the sheep that were ring-straight, spotted, and speckled. And a period of time has passed to where essentially all of the good of the cattle, the strength of the cattle, and the majority of the cattle are now ring-straight, spotted, speckled, and everything else. And so that's where we find ourselves in verse 1. It says, "And he heard the words of Laban's sons, saying, Jacob hath taken away all that was our father's, and of that which was our father's hath he gotten all this glory." So they're saying this because all the cattle have now basically transferred ownership unto Jacob. Even though he's still living amongst them, he's living with them, they can identify that Jacob now has the majority of the flock, he has all of the goods, and that they're no longer in Laban's name. Verse 2, it says, "And Jacob beheld the countenance of Laban, and behold, it was not toward him as before. And the Lord said unto Jacob, Return unto the land of thy fathers and thy kindred, and I will be with thee. Jacob sent and called Rachel and Leah to the field unto his flock, and said unto them, I see your father's countenance that is not toward me as before, but the God of my father hath been with me." So in this opening portion of chapter 31, we learn a few different things here. Because Jacob has all of Laban's goods, his attitude towards Jacob is completely changed. And I think this is important to think about, but if someone, you know, like Laban is around you and their countenance is completely changed, their attitude around you is completely changed, it's probably just a good idea to get out of there anyways. And the reality is this happens to a lot of us. You know, you start serving God or you start wanting to be more Christian or doing things that are right. Your family and your friends, their attitude or their countenance, as it were, their face, might change a little bit towards you. They may look at you as a different person. They may become envious of you or disgruntled against you. And honestly, if you have the ability to separate yourself, oftentimes it's for the better. You know, it's for the best that you don't stick around someone that doesn't like you, that's disfavorable towards you. You know, if you have that opportunity, you don't want to just stick around and basically be around people that don't like you. It's just going to cause more problems and more issues. Now, obviously, it's depending upon the circumstance. But another thing you have to understand is just because people don't like you does not mean that God is upset with you. You know, Laban's very upset with him. Laban's sons are very upset with Jacob, right? They despise Jacob because he's taken their goods, he's taken their money. But the Bible teaches that God is with him, that God is on his side. So even though the whole world may start not liking you or people in your life may not like you, that's not an indication of God's pleased with you or not. That's a completely separate issue. God is with Jacob. God has blessed Jacob. And because God has blessed Jacob, that's why Laban doesn't like him. In fact, this is a very common theme in the Bible. Even if you start at the very beginning, we've been going through the book of Genesis. What's another story like that? I don't know. How about Cain and Abel, right? What happens? Well, Cain and Abel offer a sacrifice unto the Lord, but God has not respect unto Cain's offering or to Cain himself, but the Bible says that he had respect unto Abel and to his offering. So what happens? Cain ends up despising Abel. Cain ends up killing Abel. So it may have been a good idea for Abel to say, like, I'm going to stay away from you. You know, I'm not going to hang out with you as much anymore because obviously your countenance has changed. Another thing we can learn from this, and I want to preach a whole sermon on this later, but you can tell how somebody feels about you based on their face alone. I'm not joking. You know, when you're around, you can only hide your emotions so much. You know, now obviously there's some people that are just considered a psychopath. What that means is they have no feelings inside, so everything's fake to them. But a normal person has a really hard time, disguising how they feel around somebody and their true emotions about someone. And often you can kind of figure out how someone feels about you just simply by their face. You know, do they light up when they see you? Do they kind of look away when you're coming? You know, do they make eye contact with you? And all these social clues are important because they'll help you in making friends and not making friends. Because there's some people that just don't want to be your friend. And you say, well, how do I know that? Look at their face. Their face will tell you if they want to be your friend. And so sometimes people like force a friendship on someone that they're not really that interested in. It's because they're not picking up on the social clues. And so it's important to pick up on social clues and identify. And look, women are typically much more keen on these type of things. Women typically can kind of tell, they're like, that lady doesn't like me. And you're like, how do you know that? And it's just like, just look at her, you know? Whereas guys, I mean, we could like hate each other and really ignorant about it because we just don't really know. We don't pick up on these clues as often. But, you know, it's important to still try your best to pay attention to social cues, to how people respond to you, you know, and identify sometimes even if your boss is mad at you, so you see an opportunity to fix it or to correct it or to ask them about it. And, you know, you don't want to just be around people that don't like you. You don't want to be in a situation where people are disgruntled against you. You got to kind of identify those situations so that you can handle them to the best of your ability. But at the end of the day, what can I learn from these few verses here is this. Just because people around me start hating me and disliking me, God could be very pleased with me at that same time. God could be very for me and on my side and want to bless me. And oftentimes it's because you're being blessed that so many people dislike you. You know, they get mad at you, they get envious of you because of God's favor, God's blessing in your life. But, you know, that's their problem, it's not yours. Look at verse number 6, the Bible says, "And ye know that with all my power I have served your father." Now that's a crazy statement. Think about what he's saying. He's saying, I've served Laban the best I could possibly serve him with all that I've got. And you know what? You guys, you want to get promoted? Serve your boss with all your power. And here's the thing. When we read this story, Laban is not a good boss. Laban is a terrible boss. Laban doesn't pay well. Laban rips him off. Laban lies to him. Laban is not sincere to him, yet he still works for him with all of his power, with all that he's got. And that's what God expects of us to do, is to work to the best of our ability and to work hard and to be diligent, even if you have a bad boss. Some people kind of have this cavalier attitude as if their boss mistreats them. Well, I don't have to work as hard now, or I don't have to show up on time, or I don't have to, you know, I can cut corners because they're not paying me as well or doing good things for me. I read a story about Amazon workers recently, and apparently they were being paid automatically through this payroll system, and there was like a glitch where it just wasn't paying their employees at all, or like cutting their hours, or wasn't tracking their progress. They would show up to work, but the automatic system wouldn't notify they were at work, so they're not getting paid for days that they actually showed up for work. And they estimated it was millions of dollars, or, you know, tons and tons of money that basically Amazon was just shorting all their employees on a regular basis. And here's the thing. Even if you work for Amazon, you still have to do your job. You still have to be a good employee. And you know what's frustrating in this world today is it seems like very few people work hard. I mean, the customer service in this world has just gone to almost nothing. I mean, it's very poor. People are very upset. And you know, a lot of them have a pretty legitimate reason to be upset with their employer. I'm sure that they're being overworked, underappreciated, underpaid, all kinds of issues they have to deal with on the job. You know, they have to be constantly bombarded with their health concerns. You know, what poisons they put in their body recently, you know, certain diapers they're putting on their face and all kinds of other issues they have to worry about and all kinds of safety protocols and all kinds of weird things that are being mandated and forced to have to deal with. So it'd be real easy to just be upset. It'd be real easy to just get mad at your boss, even though it's not really your boss's fault in a lot of cases. You know, get mad at just the world and just be a bad employee. You know what? You should never be a bad employee. You should never give it a half effort on the job. You should always give it a full effort. Whatsoever thy hand find to do it, do with all thy might, is what the Bible teaches. And you should really look at it as your boss being Jesus Christ. You know, how much effort would you put into it if Jesus Christ showed up on the job and said, hey, I need you to go put in a few extra hours? Oh, you want me to put in a few extra hours? You'd be like, yes, sir. You know, like, can I do more? I mean, that's how you would actually treat the job. And look, there's always going to be a balance to life, work, church, these type of things. You know, you got to kind of balance and juggle all of these things. You know, my boss is saying, don't go to church anymore. I'm going to go to church, right? If my boss is saying you can't be with your wife and you can't see your family and you can't provide for their needs, you know, I would find a different job. But within reason, is my boss says jump, I'm just going to jump. I'm not even going to ask how high. Because I'm just going to start jumping, you know? And you know how high I'm going to jump? As high as I can. Some people are like,
how high, you know? I don't want to jump that high. He's like, jump, and you're just like, yeah, woo, done. I mean, because, you know, the man of God says smite, and, you know, instead of just wondering what to do, you should have just been smiting with all his might, you know, just smite until the guy tells you to stop smiting. You should be like the guy at Olive Garden with the cheese. He walks up, and he's just like, do you want cheese on it? And he's just like, tell me when. But he's just going to keep going, you know. You should just keep going until they're like, when? You know, keep going, just jump as high, strike as hard. I mean, that's what the attitude of a true Christian worker should be like. You know, and it's sad that the world today, they want to find out everything. You know, is this covered by insurance, jumping? Do you cover my workers' comp on jumping? You know, is this really part of my job duties? Show me in my job duties where I'm supposed to jump. You know, instead of just saying yes, sir, and start jumping. You know what I mean? And look, Jacob is a great example here of someone who did everything with all his power and all his might, even though he had a pretty crappy employer here. You know, he's got to work for his father-in-law, too. That's probably a bonus. Look at what it says in verse number 7. This is what he says his boss was like. And your father hath deceived me and changed my wages 10 times. But God suffered him not to hurt me. You don't have much to complain about when you haven't got your wages changed 10 times. Can you imagine? That'd be frustrating, right? Verse 8, if he said thus, the speckled shall be thy wages, then all the cattle bear speckled. And if he had said thus, the ringstrake shall be thy hired, then bear all the cattle ringstrake. Thus God had taken away the cattle of your father and given them to me. It came to pass at the time that the cattle conceived, that I lifted up mine eyes and saw in a dream, and behold, the rams which leaped upon the cattle were ringstrake, speckled, and grizzled. And the angel of God spake unto me in a dream, saying, Jacob. And he said, here am I. And he said, lift up now thine eyes, and see all the rams which leap upon the cattle are ringstrake, speckled, and grizzled. For I have seen all that Laban doeth unto thee. I am the God of Bethel, where thou anointest the pillar, and where thou vowedest a vow unto me. Now arise, get thee out from this land, and return unto the land of thy kindred. So the Bible tells us that even though Jacob was being ripped off 10 times, even though Jacob was, you know, being defrauded by his father-in-law, even though his father-in-law was a bad employer, the Bible teaches that God noticed all those things, noticed that Jacob was a hard worker anyways, and so God decided to take care of Jacob, and God decided to provide a way to give all of the wealth of Laban unto Jacob. Now, when you read chapter number 30, by itself, it kind of seems like Jacob's being kind of sneaky, he's being kind of cunning, like he's kind of taking advantage of his employer, he's ripping him off. But when you study the story, the Bible makes it very clear that God told him to do everything that he did. God said, look, this is what's going to happen. The cattle are going to produce this way. You need to basically go unto Laban and tell him that's what your wages are going to be. And then it's going to happen just like I said. Now, in order for Jacob to fulfill this prophecy, he had to have faith. Because he's basically trusting that God's going to provide his wages based on the grizzled, speckled, and the ring-straked dream. He hasn't seen it yet. He doesn't know. He made the deal with Laban before it ever even happened. So what was he really relying upon? He was relying upon God to be faithful. He was relying upon God to pay his wages. And he said, you know what? The ring-straked, spotted, speckled, grizzled, all those, I'll take those. Based on what? Faith of the Lord. And then what happens? The Lord gave him all of Laban's cattle. It's not Jacob's fault that the cattle ended up bearing that way. God's in complete control of the genetics. God's the one that opens and closes the womb, not just of the male and female, but also of the cattle, also of the beasts, also of all the birds of the air, every single living creature. God is in complete control of those items, and so he wanted to give that unto Jacob. He noticed that Jacob was suffering. And here's something that we don't often think about, but even though Jacob suffered, and it was a long period of time that he was getting ripped off over and over, at the end, how much was he ripped off? Zero. He got everything. So he ended up not getting ripped off at all. It just only felt that way or seemed that way in the moment. And that's where it takes faith. It takes faith to serve and be a faithful, humble servant and to work hard and to do that which is right, trusting that the Lord will take care of you, that the Lord will provide for you, that in the end, you're going to get all your due. But you know what? That takes a lot of faith to get to the end point. It's easier to just, you know, you're ripping me off. I'm just going to go ahead and leave. What if Jacob had quit at any point during his employment? Would he have received
this huge bounty? Would he have received all the wages that were the back wages? No, he wouldn't have. But God made sure to give him the back wages because he was just a faithful employee, doing that which is right, having faith in the Lord, and then eventually God gave him the cattle. God gave him all of the goods, and he ends up suffering nothing at all. He gets all the wages that he had. You know, what if throughout his history he had just gotten, you know, a little bit here, one-tenth here, two-tenths here, three-tenths there, four-tenths, and then he eventually got to the all having all the cattle that he had. He just felt like, okay, you know, I worked hard and I made all this money. But rather, he got, it was like 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 10. You know, he got it all in the last minute, didn't he? He got it all at the end, which took a lot of faith. It took a lot of hard work. It took a lot of trust in the Lord to take care of him. And then God ends up getting the glory for having given him all that cattle. You know, it's not based on his own power or might or strength, but rather just serving the Lord, and the Lord ends up blessing him. Go over to Proverbs chapter 13 for a moment. Keep your finger here. Go to Proverbs chapter number 13. But it's important to remember in this story that it's not by his cunning, not by his deceit, not by his trickery that he got the cattle. It's by God seeing him faithful and God rewarding him with the cattle. That's why he got the cattle, okay? Because some people might read that story and think like, oh, so we're supposed to swindle our employer. Oh, we're supposed to take advantage of our employer. No, 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 no. God gave him the cattle. It was not through deceit or any kind of malicious intent, but rather he was just trusting the Lord would provide for him, and the Lord did so. Proverbs chapter 13, look at verse 21. Evil pursueth sinners, but to the righteous good shall be repaid. You know, that's a verse that you should take by heart and by faith. Evil pursues sinners. You know, evil in the Bible can mean two things. It could be something wicked or harm. And oftentimes the Bible refers to evil as harm. So it's basically saying harm is going to pursue people that are sinners, but to the righteous good, meaning blessing and favor, shall be repaid. Meaning, if you do that which is right, if you're a good and faithful steward of the things that God's blessed you with, you should get repaid eventually. God's promising you that good is going to repay you. And you know what's really good? Just going to sleep having a good conscience. You know, going to sleep feeling like you did that which is right. You know, it's hard to sleep when you feel like you've just screwed up and you've done wrong and you've done evil. And you look, we've all been there. We've all done that. We've all screwed up. We have bad days. We do things that we're not proud of. We sin and even other just not even sin, just do something that's wrong. And you feel crappy when you go to bed. You know, you feel bad that day. You feel bad the next day. But you know what? When you do that which is right, even if you've been cheated, even if you've been swindled, you still feel better than when you did something wrong. Than when you did evil, you know, or if you've ever stolen, you know, especially, you know, maybe when you're younger, you steal 10 bucks, steal 5 bucks. That money doesn't feel as sweet as when you worked for it. Even if, look, if I worked, you know, 10 hours and got paid 5 bucks, that 5 bucks would feel better than stealing 5 bucks in 5 seconds. Even though 5 bucks in 10 hours is not a good job. You are severely underpaid. But you know what? I'd feel better about that 5 bucks than I would if I'd stolen it. Or 50 bucks or 100 bucks, it wouldn't even matter, because you know what? It's better to just do things that are right, be right with God. Look at the very next verse. A good man leaveth an inheritance to his children's children, and the wealth of the sinner is laid up for the just. And that's a cool verse. Notice what he's saying. Hey, the people that are sinners, sometimes they'll store a lot of wealth up. Sometimes it seems like a lot of good things are going for them, but then just all of a sudden, they just lose all that wealth. All of a sudden, that wealth just goes to the just. Doesn't it seem like that's our story here? All of the wealth of Laban just keeps getting stored up, stored up, stored up, stored up. Jacob's just storing it up for him, right? But then eventually what happens to all that wealth? It's just handed over into Jacob. All of the wealth of the sinner was laid up for the just. And obviously Jacob is just by faith, not because he's such a great guy. Go if you would to Exodus chapter number 3. Go to Exodus chapter 3. Let me show you another version of this. This is an important concept to, you know, believe in, because this is how God's economics work. You know, God's economics are not, you know, the economics of this world. You know, it's not Keynesian economics, not communism economics. It's not, you know, a lot of people, their whole philosophy in this world is carnal. You know, their health advice is carnal. Their spiritual, you know, they ignore the spiritual. They ignore the spiritual in economics. They ignore the spiritual and everything that goes on. But you know what? The spiritual always is the exception to every carnal rule. You say, like, how is working hard for a terrible employee going to pay off? But it worked out, didn't it?
for Jacob. You know, you could even be in an even worse situation. How about the children of Israel in Egypt are literal slaves? Talk about not getting a paycheck. Talk about not receiving that which is good. You know, they built all kinds of cool stuff for the Egyptians. They built the pyramids. They built all kinds of amazing structures for the Egyptians. You know, when they end up leaving, all this wealth is stored up for the Egyptians. But then what happens? Look at Exodus chapter 3, verse 21. This is when they're going to leave. This is God telling what's going to happen. And I will give this people favor, talking about the children of Israel, in the sight of the Egyptians. It shall come to pass that when ye go, ye should not go empty, but every woman shall borrow of her neighbor and of her that sojourneth in her house, jewels of silver and jewels of gold and raiment, and ye shall put them upon your sons and upon your daughters, and ye shall spoil the Egyptians. Isn't that cool? When they left, God didn't just, you know, kick them out. God said, hey, just borrow all of their goods. Borrow all their money. Borrow all their silver. Borrow all their gold. Because you're not going to have to come back and pay it back. You know? And they just spoiled them. They just took all their goods just right out of Egypt. All the wealth of the sinner was laid up for the just, wasn't it? And we know that they weren't just by their actions. They were just by faith in Christ. Because the children of Israel are just as wicked as any other people. Okay? In fact, they really struggle in the wilderness because of how sinful they are. But notice God blessed them with all the goods. God blessed them with all of this money and prosperity. Go back, if you would, to Genesis chapter 31. See what that tells me? It's more important to be right with God than to have lots of money. You know, a lot of people say, you know, in order to make money in this world, it's who you know. That's true, because if you know God, he's going to take care of you. It is about who you know. But you know what? It's not about cheating and deceit. You're never going to keep those wages. And easy come, easy go anyways. People that have lots of money given to them super easy, they don't spend it well. They're not good stewards or money managers. I mean, when you come to celebrities, sports athletes, people that win the lottery, any of these people that get these huge payoffs just real quick, I mean, they just waste it and blow it and lose it. And all the people that are their friends are fake anyways. You know, it'd be better to learn who your friends are for a lifetime and then get money than to get money at the beginning and wonder who your friends are for your whole lifetime. And realize that you didn't have any in any ways, right? Job kind of realizes, I didn't really have as great of friends as I thought. You know, his friends aren't even that great. But you know what? It's important to have righteousness than to have wealth. Even if you never get money in this life, even if you never have great riches in this life. I mean, the poor widow woman that we read about having great riches in heaven, I don't think she got rewarded on this earth necessarily. We don't read about her, you know, inheriting some great mansion or something on this earth or having some great wealth given to her or winning the lottery. I'm sure all of her needs were provided for, though. I'm sure she still had clothing and food because God is going to make sure to take care of her in those ways. But you know what? She may have gone without. She may have not had the nicest car. There wasn't any cars, right? The nicest chariot, you know, the nicest horse, the nicest house. You know, she might not have had all the nicest goods back in that time. You know what? You're just passing through anyways. It's all a rental right now anyways. Okay, whether you own it or not, it's a rental, okay? Look at verse number 14. The Bible reads, "And Rachel and Leah answered and said unto him, Is there yet any portion or inheritance for us in our father's house? Are we not counted of him strangers? For he has sold us and hath quite devoured also our money. All the riches which God hath taken from our father, that is ours, and our children's. Now then, whatsoever God has said unto thee, do. Then Jacob rose up and set his sons and his wives upon camels. And he carried away all his cattle and all his goods which he had gotten, cattle of his getting, which he had gotten in Paddan Aram, for to go to Isaac, his father, in the land of Canaan." So now he's going to return. He wants to return to Isaac, his father. It's been a long time. And his wives, you know, Leah and Rachel, they are like, what's the point of sticking around here? I mean, he's got all of our money anyways. But I don't know if I really like their motivation or what they say, but what they do is right. And I want to go to a verse. Keep your finger and go to Matthew chapter 19 for a moment. Go to Matthew chapter number 19. But the Bible clearly teaches that once you get married, the dynamic or relationship that you have with your parents has changed. Okay? And this is an important thing to learn. And not everybody likes this teaching, especially grandparents. But the reality is that once you get married, you're supposed to be closer to your spouse than your parents.
Okay, your spouse replaces and trumps your parents. Look what it says in Matthew 19, verse 5. And said, this is Jesus, for this cause shall a man leave father and mother and shall cleave to his wife, and they twain shall be one flesh. So the Bible teaches the reason you would even leave father and mother is because you're married. But notice it says to leave. I've seen people literally say, I've heard people say, it's wrong for children to leave their parents after marriage. And I'm thinking, like, the Bible says that exact statement. You're supposed to leave. You're supposed to get some distance. And honestly, I believe that if you want to have a healthy marriage, you need healthy boundaries away from the parents. Both your parents and definitely their parents, okay? You really want to be away from the in-laws, okay? And look, I'm not against having a great relationship with your parents or your in-laws. I think you should. But you want to have some healthy boundaries. You want to keep some distance because they're only going to cause problems in your marriage in a lot of ways. Let me phrase that differently. When you have this proximity, your in-laws and your parents can cause a lot of problems. Typically, they're not going to make the marriage itself better. Okay, that's what I mean by that. Meaning that, they're not going to make you love your spouse more. Typically, they're only going to draw you away from your spouse or put some kind of animosity in between you and your spouse because your parents have a bias. They care about you way more than this other person, just naturally speaking. So therefore, they're going to always side with you, see you're good. I mean, you could do all kinds of bad things and your mom still loves you. Your mom thinks you're right. All these murderers, all these drug dealers or whatever, their mom's like, he's such a good boy, and it's just like, really? I don't think so. Because your mom's just always on your side, The mom thinks that her son can do no wrong, It's a face that only a mother could love. But the mother loves it. But when it comes to marriage, if you want to have a tight bond, you have to stop relying upon your parents and rely upon your spouse. As a wife, you have to stop asking dad to fix everything, and you have to start asking your husband to fix everything. And it's easier to want to ask your dad because your dad's been a father and a husband for decades, right? So he's good at it. Whereas your newly found husband, he might have no idea what he's doing because he probably doesn't. He probably doesn't know how to fix the car. He doesn't know how to fix the trash compactor. He doesn't know how to do all the things that dad knew how to do. You know what? If you never give him a chance, then he's never going to learn it. But when you start relying upon your husband to fix everything, when you start relying upon your husband to be the provider and to take care of problems and to be there to comfort you, you start realizing he's capable. You start transferring the trust in your heart to your husband rather than your father. Whereas if you just are in close proximity, if dad's just, downstairs or whatever, some people live with their in-laws, okay? If dad's just downstairs, and there's a problem, oh, I'll call dad or I'll ask dad. And of course, dad's always going to fix it. Dad always knows what to do. Dad always has the answer to your problem. But I'm telling you, if you want to have a healthy marriage, it's better to have some distance. Now look, when it comes to your proximity of your home to their home, it doesn't really matter. Okay, you could be next door to each other. But I'm just saying in your practical life, you want to keep some distance there. You want to rely upon your spouse. And a good rule of thumb is this. Never, ever talk trash on your spouse to your parents. And it's really easy to want to. It's really because they're like the closest relationship. They look after you. They want to know these things. They want to be your support structure. But I'm telling you, you're going to create a bad marriage when you're giving all your dirty laundry to your parents. Like, oh, she puts beans in the chili, It's like, well, that's your problem, You got to rule your home, buddy, Stop buying the beans. No, just kidding. Buy more meat. He's like, well, it's cheaper. And it's like, okay, we'll get a bigger paycheck, And then you can have the right kind of chili, okay? But whatever the problems are, you want to fix them. You don't want to complain. And you don't want your parents or your in-laws to have bad feelings towards the relationship. A lot of marriages that end in divorce or have problems, a lot of times the parents fed that. The parents were like, you know what? You don't deserve to be treated that way. He shouldn't talk to you that way. Or she should be more understanding, or she should be more supportive of you or whatever. And they'll get in there and they'll try to draw their child back to them, or they'll draw their child away. And so that's why it's important to leave and then realize that you're now one flesh. Marriage is a one flesh thing. When you were born, you separate. You cut the cord. You and your mom started one flesh. You cut the cord, okay? Now you cleave unto your wife. Now you cleave unto your spouse. And when Jacob says, "We're leaving, honey," she's like, "Bye, Dad." That's the right mentality. See you later. You know, I'm going to let him decide. He gets to rule his decision. And look, I'm not saying you can't live by your in-laws or whatever. You can't live by your parents or anything like that. In fact, when I got married, my parents lived one block away from us, okay? And my in-laws lived, let me see if I can calculate it. It was like seven. I think I'm accurate. Seven blocks away. So I know all about living close to your parents and your in-laws, okay? And then eventually we moved two states away. And you want to know what was the best part of our marriage? Two states away, okay? And look, I have great in-laws. I have great parents. There's nothing wrong with them. They're very loving. In fact, my family, fortunately, really believes this doctrine. My mom is very much just like, leave them alone. I don't care. In fact, they'd probably side with my wife over me in almost every dispute, okay? So usually because she's right, but I'm just saying. But, you know, they would side with her. So at least they get it. But all parents are going to be meddling. All in-laws are going to be meddling. It's important to cleave to your spouse and have a deep relationship with your spouse. And oftentimes physical distance can actually improve your marriage. If you feel like you're having a problem in your marriage and you live, you know, in the same house as your in-laws, I have really good advice. Leave. You know, get some distance. And look, I'm not against you being around your family. Sometimes you go on hard times or you're traveling or moving. You got to live with the family. But most normal people are like, I can't wait to get out of here. You know, because it's just healthy. It's just normal to have some boundaries, have some distance, and see them every once in a while. Go to, if you would, to verse number 19 now. Go back to Genesis 31 and let's look at verse number 19. But the motivation, I don't know if I really agree with it, but at least they did the right thing. They're going to follow Jacob. Verse 19, Laban went to shear his sheep, and Rachel had stolen the images that were her father's. And Jacob stole away unawares to Laban the Syrian, in that he told him not that he fled. So he fled with all that he had, and he rose up and passed over the river and set his face toward the Mount Gilead. And it was told Laban on the third day that Jacob was fled. And he took his brethren with him and pursued after him 7 days' journey. They overtook him in the Mount Gilead. And God came to Laban the Syrian in a dream by night and said unto him, Take heed that thou speak not to Jacob, either good or bad. Then Laban overtook Jacob. Now Jacob had pitched his tent in the mount, and Laban with his brethren pitched in the Mount of Gilead. Laban said to Jacob, What hast thou done, that thou hast stolen away unawares to me, and carried away my daughters as captives taken with the sword? Wherefore didst thou flee away secretly and steal away from me? And didst not tell me that I might have sent thee away with mirth and with songs, with tabret and with harp? And hast not suffered me to kiss my sons and my daughters. Thou hast now done foolishly in so doing. It is in the power of my hand to do you hurt. But the God of your father spake unto me yesternight, saying, Take thou heed that thou speak not to Jacob either good or bad. And now, though thou wouldest needs be gone, because thou sore longest after thy father's house, yet wherefore hast thou stolen my gods? Now, if you think about this scenario, they're leaving the in-laws to go to the father, okay? So obviously, they're still going to be around family. Sometimes you can't escape them, right? They're everywhere. But in this story, Jacob left without telling Laban. And I think if you read between the lines, in the previous chapter, Jacob had already told him he wanted to leave. And before he left, he said, Appoint me thy wages, and there was the sheep. Well, according to the story, he served Jacob for 20 years, meaning 14 for the two daughters and 6 for the cattle. That would mean he says, I want to leave. 6 years later, he's still there. Okay, now that's even longer than we read in the story of Judges, you know, chapter 19, when they can't get out of there, right? So I guess in some ways it makes sense that he's just like, we got to go. You know, we got to get out of here. And it's hard. It's hard when you have time where you're spending with family. Sometimes it's hard to get away. They always want you to stay longer and stick around. But Laban's very upset that he did not get an opportunity to say goodbye. And that makes sense. The Bible tells us that God came and told Laban not to speak to Jacob good or bad. And I think that's an important thought because he's telling him not to say good or bad. He reiterates it in verse number 29. He says, take thou heed that thou speak not to Jacob either good or bad. So I believe that he did not speak good or bad because it wouldn't make sense for God to tell him and then for him to go through his whole speech and then to reiterate the fact that I was already warned not to speak to you good or bad. So at least in Laban's mind, he's not speaking to him good or bad. So keeping that in mind, what are some of the things that he did say to him? Well, he said in verse 28, thou hast now done foolishly in so doing. So notice, by telling someone that they've done something wrong or foolish is in no way bad. It's also not good. We're not saying it was good, but we're also not saying it's bad. Now, what would be the context of good or bad? Good would be blessing. What would be evil? Wishing harm or doing evil unto somebody. But here's the thing. If you do something that's wrong, if you do something that's foolish, if you do something stupid, and someone says that was stupid, that was a foolish decision, they're not hurting you. They're not harming you. They're not speaking bad to you. Whereas a lot of people, they can't handle this. They think if you actually point out their mistake, if you criticize them in any way, oh, now you're railing. Oh, now you're speaking evil of me. Now you're speaking bad about me. But wait a minute. Is everything I said true? Wait a minute. Is everything I said line up with the scriptures? Then I'm not speaking good or bad. I'm just telling you the facts. Okay? And really, that's what Laban's doing. And I wish we could go back to a world where we can just say facts. You know, it used to be that you'd be on the job and your employer could just tell you facts about you. Like, this was a bad job. And they're like, oh, why are you speaking so bad about me? It's like, it's just facts. You know, you did a bad job on your work here. You know, or you did this, you know, just saying anything that's facts. Like someone's white. Someone's black. He spoke so evil. He said I'm black. It's like, is it a fact though? Are you actually black? It's like, it gets scary. People start getting, like, they get all nervous when you just start naming facts. This guy's short. This guy's tall. This guy's skinny. This guy's fat. You know, just saying, like, this is a man. This was born a man. Oh, you know, this is a woman. You know, just by saying fact, this is an Asian female. You'd be like, people are like horrified, you know, or whatever. This guy's an Indian, you know. It's just saying facts now are offensive. Saying facts are good or bad or whatever. No, it's just facts. Just facts don't hurt feelings, okay? And the reality is that we live in a society that they can't handle this. But I wish we could go back to a society where you can handle it. And look, when people are just spitting facts at you, stop getting so offended. You know, it's one thing if he says, I hope you die. You know, it's one thing if he says, I want you to trip and fall and break your neck or whatever. That would be speaking bad to someone. Let's go back to that's the reality. You know, not actually just saying things that are normal, saying facts, saying things that are just true about someone. And look, not allowing a father to say goodbye to his family does seem like kind of a dumb decision. It doesn't seem very fair to Laban to just completely just run away out of nowhere and not allow Laban to say goodbye to his daughters, to his grandsons, to his granddaughters. He should have given him that courtesy. I believe that's probably true. Now, what his motivations were, probably is he just wanted to get out of there. But at the end of the day, if God comes to you in a night and says, like, don't speak good or bad, and you're just like, okay. For him to say this must mean that it must have been true. It must have been that he had great conviction of that being true. And I think he probably was speaking the truth. Let's see how Jacob even responds in verse 31. And Jacob answered and said to Laban, because I was afraid. For I said, peradventure thou wouldest take by force thy daughters from me. So obviously Jacob's kind of saying, like, well, I was afraid to. You know, I figured if I told you I'm leaving, you would have, you know, taken my wives away from me, or you would have, you know, fought me or striven against me or something. But it's not necessarily right for him to make that assumption or to treat Laban like that, because if you think about this whole story, they're going to end up parting. He's going to say goodbye, and he doesn't take away his wives. So it's probably a weak faith that God would allow all this evil to come to Jacob for him to just say goodbye. You know, and really, people should learn how to say goodbye in all areas of life. You know, on the job, learn how to say goodbye normally. You know, don't just, like, not show up all of a sudden. You should, you know, formally get in writing and say, hey, this is my last 2 weeks or 3 weeks or 4 weeks, whatever's appropriate for your job, your industry. Say, hey, I'll help you through this transition. I'll give you all this, these goods. You know, today people just quit mid-shift. And I'm not saying like they're walking out and protest. I'm saying like they're just, you know, like, I don't want to be here anymore. See ya. You know, this would happen, especially in the restaurant industry. Servers would just like quit randomly, you know, just walk out, not even care, go chase a Pokemon or something. It's like, don't do that. And, you know, in your relationships, you know, if you have some kind of a parting, you have conflict or whatever, say goodbye. You know, here's a good idea. If you leave a church, say goodbye. Sometimes, you know, honestly, for me, people come up to me, they'll be like, where did so-and-so go? And I'm like, I don't know. I haven't seen them. Have you seen them? Where do you think they went? You know? And I'm just like, I don't know. You know, almost nobody, it's hard for me to even think about how many times people have come and said officially, like, hey, I'm leaving. But it's probably like less than 10%. Less than 10%, probably even smaller than that. I mean, it's only happened a handful of times. Usually people just leave and they're just like, see ya, suckers, you know, I don't even know about it. You would think you'd have the common courtesy to just tell people, like, see ya, bye. Now, at the end of the day, it doesn't really bother me that much. I'm just saying that, you know, for you to be good on your part, it probably makes sense to just say goodbye, you know, to people that you know, you care about, that you're in relationship with. And when I left every church that I've left recently, I told everyone. Even the really crappy non-denom church that I was going to, I was in this, like, men's group where they would study the word, as men of the word, you know. And it was a joke. But I was leaving it, and you know what I did? I told the leader, I said, hey, I'm no longer going to go to this group anymore. I'm going to a different Baptist church. I'm King James only now, and I don't agree with the doctrine. Have a good day, you know. Thanks for whatever. Even though I didn't like the church anymore, I was really disgruntled against it. Then, hey, I went to an independent fundamental Baptist church. I was leaving to go to Faithful Word and try to become a pastor there potentially and, you know, just get plugged in and learn how to grow in the Lord. And I told my pastor in person. I said, hey, I'm leaving. I'm going to this church. I really, you know, appreciate everything you've done for me. Love you guys. Be praying for you. And he was like, great. And then obviously leaving Faith Word, I let everybody know. Everybody knew I was leaving, you know. They even threw me a party, which was nice. It was, you know, they threw me a going away party, which it's hard to throw a going away party when you just sneak out at night. And that's what Laban's even saying. He's saying, look, we could have sent thee away with mirth. You know, we could have, you know, thrown a party. We were glad that you were leaving anyways. No, I'm just kidding. We're like, sweet, or he's leaving, you know. Some people might be like that. But that just gives us an excuse to party, right? But at the end of the day, you need to learn how to say goodbye. Hey, whenever you're dating someone and you're no longer interested, say goodbye. You know, and they might get mad at the method. I would not advise this. Don't break up over email, okay? They don't take it that well or whatever. I don't know. But at least tell them goodbye. You know, some people, they'll just like kind of break up with someone in their mind, but they won't tell who they're dating. And they're like, what's going on? They're just like, they're hoping it's like Office Space where they just, these things work themselves out naturally. They stop giving Milton a paycheck and they're just like, it'll eventually work itself out naturally. Now, you need to learn how to say goodbye and just deal with the consequences of parting. You know, handle it appropriately, handle it above board. I think that's what Jacob should have done. Look what it says in verse 32. With whomsoever thou findest thy gods, let him not live. Before our brethren, discern thou what is thine with me and take it to thee. For Jacob knew not that Rachel had stolen them. And Laban went into Jacob's tent and into Leah's tent and into the two maidservants' tent, but he found them not. Then he went out of Leah's tent and entered into Rachel's tent. Now Rachel had taken the images and put them in the camel's furniture and sat upon them, and Laban searched all the tent but found them not. And she said to her father, let it not displease my lord that I cannot rise up before thee. The custom of women is upon thee, and he searched but found not the images. Now, just one quick note, Rachel ends up taking Laban's false gods. Now here's my question, how much good did Laban's false gods do for him? He lost all of his money, wealth, his whole family, and his gods. He lost it all. Now, here's the thing. What sense does that make for Rachel to take her father's false religion when it totally didn't work for him? It made no sense. And here's another important thing. When you leave father and mother and you cleave unto your spouse, sometimes it also needs to be ideologically. It also needs to be religion. Say, hey, I'm not interested in the false religion that my parents taught me growing up. I'm going to accept the real religion of the Word of God. I'm going to submit to my husband, or as the husband, you're going to lead your family. And not just because dad said so, but because God the Father said so. Okay? And at the end of the day, you have to realize whatever bad habits you have, whatever evils you have, oftentimes you're going to pass them down on your children. That's why it's important to correct it now, so that when they leave, they don't leave with a bunch of baggage. Rachel's leaving with a bunch of baggage that came from Laban. And here's another thing, men. Realize that your wife might be carrying some baggage with her from mom and pop that you have to address, that you have to fix, that you have to think about. You know, the Bible says that Jacob's unaware. Well, it just sounds like he's not getting to know his wife very well. That he's allowing his wife to literally have false religion under her bosom, you know, hidden from her husband. And look, whether it be husband or wife, you know, you don't want false religion in the home. You don't want people, you know, just even tinkering with this kind of stuff. Jacob should do a better job understanding what's in his home and not allowing false religion to come into his home. Not allowing these false gods. It's going to cause problems. Look at what it says in verse 36. And Jacob was wroth and showed with Laban. Jacob answered and said to Laban, what is my trespass and what is my sin? Thou hast so hotly pursued after me. Whereas thou searched all my stuff, what hast thou found of all thy household stuff? Set it here before my brethren and thy brethren, that they may judge betwixt us both. This 20 years have I been with thee. Thy ewes and thy she-goats have not cast their young, and the rams of thy flock have I not eaten. That which was torn of beasts I brought not unto thee. I bear the loss of it. Of my hand didst thou require it, whether stolen by day or stolen by night. Thus I was in the day the drought consumed me, and the frost by night, and my sleep departed from mine eyes. Thus have I been 20 years in thy house. I served thee 14 years for thy two daughters, and 6 years for thy cattle. And thou hast changed my wages 10 times. Except the God of my father, the God of Abraham, and the fear of Isaac had been with me, surely thou hadst sent me away now empty. God has seen mine affliction and the labor of my hands, and rebuked thee yesternight. I never used that term, but I like yesternight. We always use yesterday, but it was like in the night, so it's yesternight, right? But Laban took advantage of Jacob. It's so clear. As you keep reading, it just gets worse and worse what Laban was like unto Jacob. Not only did he change his wages 10 times, not only was he kind of deceitful with him and treated him poorly, if something got stolen, he'd make him pay for it. He would also put him out in the worst conditions. You know, at Christmas, while everybody's enjoying Christmas dinner, he's out getting the frostbite, you know? He's out when nobody's having a good time. He's having to work double shifts. He's having to work extra. He's having to bear the loss. I mean, all this bad stuff's happening to him. But you know what? God saw Jacob's work ethic. God saw what he was doing, and God is going to bless him and take care of him. That's why it's important to make sure that you're doing right. Because it says, God has seen mine affliction and the labor of my hands. Now, it says in verse number 43, and Laban answered and said unto Jacob, these daughters are my daughters, and these children are my children, and these cattle are my cattle, and all that thou seest is mine. What can I do this day unto these my daughters, or unto their children which they have borne? Now therefore come thou, let us make a covenant, I and thou, and let it be for a witness between me and thee. And Jacob took a stone and set it up for a pillar. And Jacob said unto his brethren, gather stones, and they took stones and made a heap. And they did eat there upon the heap. And Laban called it Jagar Shahadutha, but Jacob called it Galeed. A lot easier. And Laban said, this heap is a witness between me and thee this day. Therefore was the name of it called Galeed and Mizpah. For he said, the Lord watch between me and thee when we are absent one from another. If thou shalt afflict my daughters, or if thou shalt take otherwise beside my daughters, no man is with us. See, God is witness betwixt me and thee. And Laban said to Jacob, behold this heap and behold this pillar, which I have cast betwixt me and thee. This heap be witness, and this pillar be witness, that I will not pass over this heap to thee, and that thou shalt not pass over this heap and this pillar unto me for harm. God of Abraham, the God of Nahor, the God of their father, judge betwixt us. Jacob sware by the fear of his father Isaac. Then Jacob offered sacrifice upon the mountain, called his brethren to eat bread, and they did eat bread. He tarried all night in the mount, and early in the morning Laban rose up and kissed his sons and his daughters and blessed them. Laban departed and returned unto his place. Now, here's the last kind of thought I want to make real quick is this, that we see a covenant being made between Jacob and Laban, and I kind of look at this covenant as being about 20 years too late. But when he first gets married, well, I guess, you know, 14 years or whatever, how you want to look at the timeline. But whenever you get married to someone's daughter, there's kind of this baton handing off where you're kind of entrusting this other man to take care of your daughter now, right? And at the end of the day, because you're supposed to leave and cleave, the father now no longer has rule over this daughter, her protection, her being provided for, everything good and bad that's going to happen to her is now kind of under the authority and the head structure of the husband. And so it's important that the husband realize that even though the father can't always be there, the father doesn't always know what's going to happen, God is still there. And God is still going to witness everything that happens. And just like in this chapter, how God gave all the flock unto Jacob from Laban because he was a bad steward of that flock, you know, whenever you take on a wife, whenever you take on a family, there's a lot of responsibility, there's a lot of importance there, and God is still a witness to everything that you do. Therefore, it's important to take good care of your family. It's important to provide for your family. Go to Proverbs chapter number 5. Proverbs chapter 5. One of the things that really upsets Laban, and this is a normal thing, is the idea of Jacob going and finding another wife, going in some other woman. You know, he's given him both of his daughters. He's given him Leah and Rachel. He doesn't want then Jacob to go find some other hussy, some other adulteress, some other woman to become his prize and to leave his wife in the dust, to leave his wives in the dust or not care about his wives anymore. He wants them to be provided for, to be the apple of his eye. And obviously it's a weird situation. He's got two, okay? But think of it in the context of one. You know, a father, the worst thing you could think of is giving his daughter to a man that then no longer loves his daughter and wants another woman, is now after another woman. That's why it's important to take your marriage vow seriously, and when God and another man gives you his daughter, to look at that as a serious oath, as a serious covenant that he still cares about that young woman. Look at Proverbs chapter number 5, verse 15. The Bible says, "Drink waters out of thine own cistern, and running waters out of thine own well. Let thy fountains be dispersed abroad, and rivers of waters in the streets. Let them be only thine own, and not strangers with thee. Let thy fountain be blessed, and rejoice with the wife of thy youth. Let her be as the loving hind in pleasant row. Let her breast satisfy thee at all times, and be thou ravished always with her love. And why wilt thou, my son, be ravished with a strange woman, and embrace the bosom of a stranger?" So he's saying, look, you got a wife. You're married. Enjoy your wife. Be with your wife. Satisfy yourself with your wife. But look at the next verse. This is an interesting verse to go along with this thought. Verse 21. "For the ways of a man are before the eyes of the Lord, and he pondereth all his goings." I don't think that's a coincidence. He's saying, hey, why are you going and seeking another woman? God notices everything that you do. And isn't that exactly what we see Laban saying unto Jacob? Saying, hey, don't take on other wives. You know, I'm not going to be there. I can't see where you're going. And a lot of men in here, you live far from father-in-law. I mean, the father-in-law's eyes aren't upon your family. They don't know what's going on. They don't know what you're doing in your day and in your life and how you treat your spouse. You know what? God sees everything. Go to Proverbs 15 for a moment. Flip the page. Go to Proverbs chapter number 15. And look at verse number 3. The Bible says, "The eyes of the Lord are in every place, beholding the evil and the good." God sees everything. Go to 1 Timothy chapter number 5. Go to 1 Timothy chapter number 5. And the devil, through CCTV, is trying to get really close. But here's the thing. Even if you can escape CCTV, you can't escape God. The eyes of the Lord everywhere, seeing everything, seeing the good and the evil, not hiding himself. And so if you want to be blessed in your life, you have to realize God's always looking. That'll motivate you to do right. That'll motivate you to take care of your family. That'll motivate you to treat your wife as a special prize, not as a slave. You know, I feel like a lot of guys, they just want a slave to satisfy their lust. as opposed to a precious, valuable commodity as something that's far above rubies, as a helpmeet, as someone that they're supposed to cherish, love, and sacrifice for. You know, God, whenever he sent his son here to die on the cross, it was for the church. You know, he purchased the church with his own blood. And Jesus doesn't look at the church as just some kind of a slave to satisfy his lust, but rather it's one he provides for, loves, cherishes. What does he expect the church to do? Obey, right? What's a wife's job? Obey. What's a husband's job? Provide, cherish, treat with respect, not to look down upon, not to criticize, you know, just overly be critical. Because think about it. You know, guys often, they love the doctrine of being in charge, and they get to tell their wife what to do. But here's my opinion. You should analyze your life and say, how good am I following God's commandments? And then that's how I'm going to criticize my spouse. Because some guys, they want to criticize their spouse to a perfection level. And I'm like, you're not perfect. You've got serious problems too. And look, if you're looking for a wife to be perfect, you're never going to get married. Because you're not perfect. He's not perfect. Now, I'm not against correcting your spouse, getting things right, fixing things. You need to do it with love and affection, and you need to provide and take care of her as if the father-in-law was in the room. Look at 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 8. But if any provide not for his own, especially for those of his own house, he hath denied the faith and is worse than an infidel. That's strong language. The Bible teaches you have to love your spouse. You have to take care of your spouse. She's now under your protection. You know, my wife makes zero money. She's good at spending it, but she's not making a lot right now. So she needs someone to provide. She needs someone to take care of her, to help her, and to assist her. You know, it's a two-way street. Obviously, she's my helpmeet, but at the end of the day, I also have to help her. I have to provide for her and enable her to be a good mother, you know, by getting her all the needs. You know, if you want really good food, get her nice kitchen utensils. You know, it's like a Christmas present that's a double gift. It's, you know, like, get her the nice oven. Get her the nice, you know, sink. Get her the nice pots and pans. Get her that Instapot, you know. Get her whatever that she would. Get her two. You know, I think my wife wants like four Instapots or something. I don't know. It's crazy. It's like, get her. You want that really good chili? Get the crock pot. Bring home the bacon. Hey, you want to eat bacon? You got to bring home the bacon, right? You want to eat the meatless chili? Don't buy the beans, okay? Bring home. You want to eat the good meal, you got to bring the good meal onto the table. You got to love her, take care of her. You know, realize that marriage is something that's not, you know, it doesn't just happen automatically. Marriage takes a lot of effort, energy, and you're going to reap what you sow. You put a lot of love into your spouse, you'll reap a lot of love. If you put a lot of demands and expectations, you know what you're going to get? A lot of demands and expectations. And you should give your, this is what you should give your spouse, lots of grace, love, mercy, treat them with respect, realize they're, you know, someone that God died for on the cross. There's someone that agreed to marry you, which for some of you guys, that was a long shot. I mean, you don't want to go down, you don't want to play that game again. You don't want to see if you can strut gold twice, okay? You need to just cleave to what you already got, okay? Some of you, I've seen, you know, you changed after you got married, okay? You're not that strapping young man anymore. Don't hold your wife to an unrealistic expectation either. Go if you would to Psalms 36. I want to go to one more verse here. There's a lot of things we can learn from this chapter. But again, ultimately, I think it really evolves around this one point. Just the fear of God, right? Why is Jacob such a good employee? Because he had the fear of God. He realized God's paying attention to what he's doing. You know, why is it important to take care of your spouse? Because you fear God. And notice when Laban doesn't fear God, when Laban's not paying attention to what God wants, you know, he loses everything that he had. And when I look at this world today, you know, what did stop Laban at least, though, is he had some level of fear of God, right? He had enough to say, I'm not going to kill Jacob. I'm not going to hurt Jacob. But there's coming a point in time where the fear of God is going to get to such an extreme that it just doesn't stop anybody. And it's crazy. Look what it says in Psalms 36, verse 1. The transgression of the wicked saith within my heart that there is no fear of God before his eyes. You know, the thing that stopped Laban from doing something foolish was the fear of God. You know, we notice in this world today is the fear of God is absent from the hearts of men. That's why they lie. They steal, they cheat, they murder with just no fear. They just don't fear God today. And you know what? It's a dangerous place. It's a dangerous world that we live in today because people have no fear of God. They don't care what the Bible has to say. They don't care what a preacher has to say. They don't think they're going to be judged for anything. They don't think that the Bible has any impact on their life. And because of that, they just do all kinds of evil and wicked and harm. And so that's why it's important that we have church. You know, that's why it's important for people to stand up and to preach, thus saith the Lord. That's why it's important to get up and to preach the law so that people can have the fear of God in their life and realize we're supposed to fear God. God is not some paper tiger just putting out a bunch of commandments and be like, you guys, please follow this. Pretty please. You know, God's not up in heaven like the parent at the grocery store saying like, don't cry. Don't grab that candy. I'm going to count. Come over here. I'm going to count to three. Don't make me count to three. One, two, two and a half, 2.79. Come on, Johnny. Come over here. Don't make me count to five now. Three, four. No, God's not like that. God is going to actually recompense every single person for everything they've done. Unless you have the blood of Christ. I mean, you are going to get what's coming to you in this life or the next, depending on if you're saved or you're unsaved. And you know what? We need to fear God even in the midst of a crooked and perverse nation. Even when the whole world says nuts to God, we need to still say, you know what? I still fear him. And there was a whole nation that just said that to God, children of Israel. But Jeremiah said, you know what? I'm not. And guess what happened? They destroyed them. It was they're eating their own children. They're dying of famine and the sword and pestilence and just all manner of evil is just constantly consuming them and destroying them. And God said, in fact, the people that died by the sword were the lucky ones. It was so evil. And you know what? In America, we're headed in such a horrible direction. It's so evil. People have, they don't care. They'll just lie. They'll lift up their hand and they'll swear to God and they'll just lie, just straight through their teeth. Just, you know what that tells me about that person? No fear of God. And when we have people, so-called Christians today, going around and they just lie like nothing. They just twist people's words and just deceive and defraud and steal and just, they get repulsed at the commandments of God. You know, that tells me they have no fear of God. That's a very dangerous world that you live in. So beware of the world that you live in. But even if the whole world's crashing around you, you can fear God and God can still provide for you and protect you. And you know what? The wealth of the sinner is laid up for the just. Close in prayer. Thank you, Heavenly Father, for this great chapter and the blessings that you gave to Jacob and the blessings that you give us through Christ, who Jacob often pictures Christ. And I pray that we would realize that all the goods that we have today are just a gift from you and that we're supposed to be good stewards of everything we have, the physical possessions, the wives, the children, all the stuff that you've blessed us with, our church. And I pray that we would fear God rather than man. Wouldn't care what man would do to us, what man might take away from us. Because in the long run, we realize that you're going to bless those that fear you with the favor and the wealth of the sinner. In Jesus' name we pray, amen.